I'm going to show you, I'll just explain this a little bit, but I'm going to show you at the beginning of this slideshow just a few shots of just regular life and how these people live, and then we'll show you some shots of some of the saints and the different assemblies and some of the stories of those that we meet. BTP gets requests for literature from Cuba. And we get requests from Cuba. We get mail from Cuba. They have our address, and so they mail us letters. It takes sometimes four months, sometimes 8 months to get the letter. We have the capability of mailing Bibles, mailing calendars, mailing stuff into the U.S., into Cuba from Canada. But it's expensive, and it's not very reliable. And so we do a little bit of it, but we try to bring as much as we can. So on this island nation, there's, I could probably very safely say there's, I only know of one brother that has stated that he has the exercise not to leave Cuba because he says, the Lord has placed me here, and it doesn't matter how bad it gets, this is where the Lord has put me, and I'm going to stay, and my wife is going to stay. But generally speaking, every Cuban feels entrapped, feels imprisoned on the island, and wants to leave in one way or another. And so oftentimes just ministering to the hearts of the saints and to comfort them in the sense of them being imprisoned in a situation that is not very pleasant. They get 3 hours of electricity, maybe 4 hours of electricity a day, and they don't know when the power will come on. They don't know when the power will go off. They have to go shopping for food quite frequently, try to get some food. They fish. They do everything they can. They have chickens at home. It doesn't matter if they have an apartment building or something. There's chickens around all over the place, and they're trying to get some food, some meat, and they eat beans and rice and that sort of thing. So they really feel the weight of where they're living, and they don't believe the propaganda of the Cuban government at all. They believe that there's better circumstances that they could have. But anyway, there's six assemblies in Cuba at the present time. The one that's in San Antonio is not an assembly anymore, but there's still a group that are meeting together, and we meet with them, and we have meetings when we're there. But there is a new assembly in Chambas. So you got Punta Alegre and Chambas, so there's two assemblies there. El Guaro and Sarcamena, that's in Holguín. It's a large city. There's an international airport in Holguín, and there's an international airport in Santiago de Cuba, right on the south coast. And then there's an international airport right by San Antonio there. You see Matanzas. That's where I flew out last time. And then La Habana, there's an international airport. So there's, and then there's also one at Santa Clara, basically right at the center of the island. So there's checkpoints, and the local population is not allowed to go past the checkpoint. If you have a taxi, you're permitted to go past, and there are police checkpoints and so on. So it's not possible for the saints to bring me to the airport and see me off at the airport and that sort of thing. The families, the little boys and little girls, aren't allowed to go to the airport, so they have to stay home. And only those that are official, have official status, can go to the airport. So these little assemblies, you see, they're along the ocean mostly. And then on this visit, I went to Cienfuegos. You see on the, I'm going to get up here. I don't know if I can do it. Cienfuegos, we went there. We went to Fomento in Sancto Espíritus. And so we went really from the to the west of the island, and we delivered materials. We went to Piña del Río. There's a nice guest house in Vinales right about here. La Palma, so we stay in a guest house. In Cuba, you're not allowed to stay in the homes of the saints or any home of another individual because you might indoctrinate them with Western ideas and so on and so forth. You might speak against the communist government. So there's authorized guest houses. And so the government, when you land, wants to know which guest houses you're going to stay in and how long you're going to be and all this sort of thing. And so it's a fairly controlled situation. So we generally fly into Kayakoko. It's right by that arrow where it says Punta Alegre in Chambas. So we fly in there, and it's a resort tourist area. So they're a little less problematic as far as checking our luggage and that sort of thing. I'm not going to show you the pictures of and tell you the stories of all the events that take place when we come into the country, but generally speaking, I don't speak any Spanish. I don't speak anything except English in the airport. And even though the people that are interviewing you are struggling a little bit, you just kind of have to be very disciplined and not speak any Spanish, and make sure you have a Canadian passport, DR passport, Bolivian passport. Doesn't matter what it is, but don't bring an American passport. Don't show them an American passport. If you do, you're going to the interrogation room for probably at least 40 minutes. And so they want to know why an American wants to come to Cuba. So let's go ahead here. This is coming in. I've got three bags. I've got approximately 150 pounds, a little more than that, not quite 200 pounds of literature and materials. We bring what we can. This is Eric, Brother Eric. He's a taxi driver. I've used his taxi a lot. We've rented vehicles there. It's possible to rent vehicles. The last time we rented a vehicle used to cost us about $700 a week. Then it cost us $800 a week. Then it cost $1,000 for a week. And then the last time I rented it, they charged us $2,000 for the week. So we decided it was better to buy a little vehicle. So we bought a little Chinese vehicle. And as you see, it doesn't have plates on it. So it's highly illegal. Everything's illegal in Cuba. However, the communist government system works. If you have connections, it's okay. So Brother Eric, he knows all the policemen on the routes that we're going to. He knows the people that run the gas stations. He knows, he makes it a habit to make all these connections. So you get stopped by a policeman because we don't have plates. And he gives a guy a hearty handshake. They talk a little bit and everything. And then he gets back in the car and away he goes. And that's how you buy gasoline. And the whole bit, you have to have connections. So Eric picks me up. And then, you know, I just say, we drove a day and a half in this little vehicle on three quarters of a tank. And the roads are fairly flat where we were going, and not some of the areas mountainous, you know, but fairly flat. So we got very good fuel economy, and we didn't have to have gasoline in the trunk. So the gasoline supply is slightly better. The old vehicles are not as prominent on the roads anymore. So Eric picked me up, and we've got good air-conditioned car now and good fuel economy. It's very comfortable. Forward. So, as I say, everyone has chickens and other fowl. There's some peacocks and everything. But you try to get enough. Eric has the backyard all fenced in. And then he's got mesh on the ceiling so that the birds can't fly out. And then he's got hogs. So, I think Marion had some good ham when she was there. Slaughter a ham, slaughter a hog every 6 months, and everybody in the whole neighborhood has a feast. But this is necessary. The eggs are collected very carefully, and so they have eggs for a little bit of protein. There are, this is Sister Ketty, and she's a real mother in the assembly in Ponte Alegre. A godly sister. She's had sorrow upon sorrow. A young son, I think he was like 24 years old, killed in a car accident, that sort of thing. There's sorrow upon sorrow. She wakes up in the night and she gets her Bible out. She reads for a couple of hours and then she prays and she goes back to bed. She just continually that way. But diabetic, there's a lot of Cubans that are diabetic. You're eating rice all the time. You're eating beans and so on. But there's a lot of sugar. They have sugar cane. And so medical supplies are difficult. It's hard to believe, but, you know, I've seen better pharmacies in Mexico than what I've seen in Cuba. There's used to be a very good medical system, but a doctor makes $40 a month. A street sweeper makes $40 a month. The farmer gets $40 a month. That's his salary for the month. And so there's not a lot of initiative to get a better medical system. So we bring a lot of medicines. There's prescription medicines that are necessary, so we bring those. This is Dylan on the left, and Danielle, that's his middle name, but you see the nice shirts. Some of the sisters have bought them shirts. That's, I've come for a visit, and that's what I see. But the rest of the time, they're half naked and running around with T-shirts that have holes in them and all that sort of thing, barefoot. But I've come to visit, and they're dressed nicely. So this Sister Yareles next door has these two little boys. Her husband is, Yandy, is drunk every night. He drinks cheap rum, and he's drunk every night. So these boys don't have a very good life. And so they live right next door to the assembly and right next door to Sister Ketty. And Sister Ketty and the family helps them out and looks after those little boys. They're just like sons or grandsons. And this little guy, I think, is a believer. Maybe he's just quickened, but I'll show you another slide shortly. But we gave them a couple of little cars here, and they played all day with that. They usually have a, you don't want to see the toys they play with. Let's go. There's a hot water tank heating system. So they have tanks on the roof, so you fill up the water tank, and then, but to have hot water for a shower, this is actually Cuban made. And so they installed it. A man was leaving Cuba legally, and so he had bought this thing and hadn't installed it. So Eric was able to get it at a better price, got it, had it installed, and then so they're starting to use a little more solar. If you don't have any electricity, you see car batteries in everybody's house. You see solar panels. You see generators outside and so on. So they're doing this plumbing. Everything's on the outside. I'm just showing you the shots. There's Teflon tape. You can't go to the hardware store and buy fixtures. You can't buy elbows or, you know, you have to have connections. This is communist Cuba, and you have to have a connection. So somebody on the outside will send you in a package some plumbing materials and so on. Well, he doesn't have Teflon tape, so he's making some out of plastic bags. And so it actually works pretty good. If you're out of Teflon, you could probably try it. So he's helping the plumber. So this is his toolbox, the cardboard box. And these are some of the fittings that he has that he's been able to scavenge. And that's his drill to be able to drill through the concrete and get his plumbing done. So this plumber works on guest houses and resort hotels. I didn't show you a picture of the plumber and his helper, but And so here's the kids playing in the back. They don't have any green space to play in, generally speaking. If they go by the seaside and so on, if mom and dad would have the time to take them, they could get some green. But they play in the concrete, and there's a little bit of packaging here from the solar water heater. And so the kids are all playing. You see the little stuffed toy, right? The little girl has a stuffed toy sitting there. And so they're playing there. They got these little cars, and so they had a blast. They played all day with those two little cars. They're little friction cars. You haul them backwards, and then they go across the floor. Now, this is Dylan, the little boy on the right, and he loves to sing. And we spend the Lord's Day driving, having meetings in Punta Alegre, and then meetings in Chambas, and then at night, I was here, and Dylan brings his little hymn book, and he says, "I want to sing." He sang his little heart out, and I have a little Bluetooth speaker here, and I have the hymns, a lot of those children hymns. I think it's a book that Dean had, and I didn't have enough of them, so I just blew them up and printed some myself. But so we... Beto Ramirez in Reynosa, Mexico, recorded those hymns. I know that Brother Dan Leaning recorded all of them in the little book, the hymn book, the Spanish hymn book, which is an excellent hymn book. But these are just gospel-oriented, and they've got a lot of the children's hymns. And so Beto recorded them. And so what we do is we put it on the phone, and we play the hymn, and he sings and sings. You can hear him across the street, and the sister Ketty loves to sing as well. So we sang for maybe an hour, and he'd be calling one hymn out after another, and he knows them, and he wants to sing. Well, his father was next door, and his father heard us singing. And then the next morning, his father came over and sat in the rocking chair. And so we were able to talk about the Lord for probably half an hour, 45 minutes, just about salvation and the Lord. And he hears this singing, and he hears the meetings that are going on. So we can pray for Yandi, Mr. Yandi, and that he'll get saved. His wife doesn't have a very happy life, and his little boys have a struggle because of his lifestyle. Now, this is Chambas, the little assembly in Chambas. As you notice, there aren't too many brothers. There's lots of little ones, and they love to sing too, but there's a lot of sisters. This is Zuleika that's standing up here. And then Sister Emma is in the dark red right by the window and has her hands on a couple of little girls. Sister Emma is sister to Sister Ketty in Punta Alegre. So the assembly meets in her little house. It's a second story. I'll show you another shot of that. But Danielle is really the only brother that consistently attends. There used to be another three brothers, but they're not very exercised. They're not very stable. And so they move around. And one brother still lives in the neighborhood, Michael, but he doesn't come. Got insulted. But how the assembly suffers. Because there are not young men. And not even those older ones that just want to exercise their priesthood. And I just say this, Brother Bob would probably laugh a lot, and he'd chuckle, and I'm taking a meeting in Chambas, and maybe when I'm praying and so on, and Brother Dean probably would too, and so on, and I'm not as fluent as they are, and Brother Louise would kind of chuckle a little bit, but I read the scriptures and try to help these dear saints, and we have a remembrance of the Lord, and you know, it's simple, but they know why they are gathered to the Lord's name. It's not uncommon for them to sit around after a meeting and just thank the Lord that they know what it is to be gathered to the Lord's name. They know what it is to be able to remember the Lord in his death in a simple way. They thank the Lord that they're not under bondage to some of these systems of religion that are on the island, that there's Methodists, there's Baptists, there's Catholic churches, there's Pentecostals, there's Presbyterian, and they all have their tentacles in and different aspects of things, but they feel at liberty in the presence of the Lord. So they're thankful. So many of them know why they're there. Then this is the home, Sister Emma, and they're on the balcony. I'm just about to leave here. And so they all come out on the balcony and wave us off. It's not much of a place to live, but that's where they live. So we're just about to leave the house on Monday morning, and I let Eric drive. I usually share the driving with him, but with a car with no plates, we decided that he was going to do the driving because he can explain things and he's got a Cuban license and so on. So here's the road to Fomento, and you'll notice the right-hand lane is not operational. It's been like that for several years. This is a superb road. I mean, normally, some of you have been to Mexico and northern Brazil and other places like that. I mean, the roads are atrocious. It's just, you're just weaving inside and out. And sometimes you're driving on the highway and you're facing the other way. And then there's another car coming, so you have to go up on the bumpy road. And then you pull back on. It's just, so this is fabulous. But it's a nice road, and so we're going to Fomento. Sometimes there's lines on the road. The railways are basically defunct. There's one train line that runs from Havana. It'll run to Fomento, but they're almost not using the system at all. This is marvelous railroad crossing. The others are, you have to crawl across them. You're supposed to stop before you go to across the railroad track. But those railroad crossings, you have to stop to be able to get over them. So this is the whole system, 70, 80 years ago, was fabulous. The Americans were there. The sugar plantations were running. The railroads were running. The roads were nice. The bridges were built. Everything was maintained. The electrical system was put in really under American auspices. But the Cuban government doesn't maintain anything. And so what's happened is the whole electrical system is 80 years old. It's more than 80 years old, but it doesn't function properly. It's oil-fired, and they just don't repair it. The rail systems just fall into pieces, and so they have infrastructure. They could live better, but there's no impetus to do it. So this is in Fomento. Yasmani is the second from the right, and I think John Kaiser would probably recognize him, right? You never seen him before, but you recognize the name. Absolutely. Yasmani. He is just diligent for asking for materials. So the brother on the right, his name is Michael, S. Michael. And very warm-hearted brother. I met Yasmani, Eric and I met Yasmani, and at this outdoor area. And then we said we'd want to see S. Michael and then some of these other brethren. And so he calls. And in Cuba, when there's a stranger, there's going to be a meeting. And you say, well, we'd like to have a meeting at 10 o'clock in the morning. Poof. Everybody's there. And they drop everything. They just come. And they want you to be there for at least 2 hours. And they want to have coffee. And they want to have a little time of fellowship. So 5 minutes later, these brethren are all come racing over on bikes and walking and so on. So we had a very nice visit, and they got some gospel tracts. They got some Bibles. They're stacked up at the end there. And we gave them some booklets, a set of booklets, and then an order form that they could look through the Spanish literature that's available that we print. And so we weren't even off the island, and we had five of these things back sent to us that, here, this is what we want. And so there, we've got the material collated. We've got it all packaged. And so I don't know whether I'm going back there shortly or whether we'll mail it. So they're just delighted. Now, how many Bibles do you have at your house? Do you know how many Bibles you have at your house? You don't know, huh? Maybe you can go and count. Some of these people don't have a Bible. And, you know, if there was a puddle and you had to walk around the puddle, if you're a little boy and you like stomping in puddles, like Isaac does, if you said, now, don't stomp in the puddle, what's the first thing that you would want to do as a little boy? You'd want to stomp in that puddle. You'd wait till Daddy wasn't looking and you'd stomp in the puddle. Well, they don't have Bibles. And they long to have a copy of the printed Word of God. And even to get a paperback Bible is something of a treasure. And you come back the next trip and there's evidence of it being read. So it's marvelous. Now, you'd say, well, why can't they get Bibles? Well, I asked one of these brothers, why can't they get Bibles? Well, obviously, the government opposes that. You're allowed to bring one Bible per year, or mail one Bible per year to someone in Cuba, and it has to be the government-approved translation and so on. Well, when I bring my luggage in, I hide the Bibles all underneath. I put all kinds of clothes and put medicine on top. I put booklets, I put calendars and all that kind of stuff, and then I put all the Bibles at the bottom. And so when somebody comes rummaging through my luggage and they take medicines out, they take all this stuff and they're looking and looking, they rarely see a Bible. And one time we got caught with 12 of them, and so it took about maybe 45 minutes in interrogation separately, Manuel and myself, but we were able to get all 12 Bibles into the country. So, thank God we have the Bible, the Word of God. Thank God you have the liberty to read it. Thank God you have more than one in the house. Thank God for it. So these brethren are very, very, very grateful for any literature. There's no printing in, very, very little printing in Cuba. And it's frowned upon by the government because you might print anti-government materials and so on, so it's not something that's common. So here's Brother George that's requested some material, and we normally would just go to the post office, and I have done that in Cuba, gone to the post office, and we get the postage, and we mail all this material. Well, it could take 8 months. We don't know. It depends. If you're in Havana, I mail you a package in La Habana, it could be 3 weeks. In Piñado Rio, it's maybe about 45 minutes or an hour away from La Habana. So you might get your package, could be in 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks. But if you live on the far end of the island in Punta Alegre, you could be 2 months. In some of these other places, you could be 3 months, 4 months, 5 months. If you send it from the U.S., there's a dear brother, and I think it was probably from BTP, sent some calendars in 2023. And because it had U.S. postage, it came from the U.S., it sat in a warehouse for a year, and it was delivered at the beginning of 2025. So So we end up just taking all the contacts that we have and trying to make a route so that we can drop off materials and meet these brethren and see if there's any interest in the truth and so on. So they receive their materials with joy. And this is dear brother, Giovanni Ocampo and his wife, Maciel. I think I give you another photo, the second one there, but you can see the calendars on the table, the package calendars, gave them booklets, gospel tracts, Bibles. And let's go to the next slide. He's 22 years old. I was there on his birthday or just before his birthday. He and his wife, they attended.